And now, to help make sense of a turning point week in the race for the Democratic nomination, here are Shields and Brooks. That is syndicated columnist Mark Shields and New York Times columnist David Brooks. Hello to both of you. So the earth shifted on its axis, or at least the Democratic Party, the Democratic primary did, David. We had South Carolina, we had Super Tuesday, we had four presidential candidates drop out, or maybe more than that. What happened?
Oh, I've never seen anything like it. It was in the 48 hours after South Carolina, the polls were moving so fast. Some pollsters were saying that polls that were 12 hours old were obsolete. And it was a spontaneous move by millions of people all around the country in different demographics, turning as one and reaching the same conclusion that it's got to be Joe Biden. And why they didn't do that 6 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, I think first, Super Tuesday forced a decision on a lot of voters all at once. Second, you had an amazing act of political selflessness. Amy Klobuchar could have won Minnesota, and it would have been a nice feather in her bonnet. And she said, no, I would be selfish. And Pete Buttigieg did the same. And so you had a party establishment, frankly, doing the right thing. But more important was the rank-and-file voters who just, they looked at the reality. And like a community is more than just a bunch of individuals. A community, people have common values. They sense each other's movements. And I don't really think the Democratic Party acted like a community, moving all in, at one moment.
What did it look like to you?
Well, it was good, David. African-American voters are the most strategic voters in the Democratic Party. They're not much given to empty gestures. They want to retire Donald Trump more than any group in the electorate. And they saw in Joe Biden a means of doing that and the instrument, and they saw in Bernie Sanders an obstacle to that. And they saved the Democratic Party.
In South Carolina.
South Carolina. They redeemed it. I don't disagree with the points that David made. They're good, but I think Donald Trump is the key to this. Donald Trump inspired, organized, galvanized Democrats. The idea of beating him became more than just a concern or an interest. It was an overriding passion. You can see it, late deciding voters, as David was talking about those polls changing, 40% of the people in North Carolina who decided late went to Joe Biden. 40% decided they went overwhelmingly to Joe Biden. Same thing in Virginia, across the board. I mean, it was a very practical decision. There's a difference between an ideologue and a pragmatist in politics. Ideologue believes what is right works. A pragmatist believes what works is right, and the Democrats were pragmatists.
When we were here together a week ago at this table, Democratic voters were still struggling, David, with the right thing to do. They were almost paralyzed with indecision. Something changed.
Yeah, I think it was, well, partly it was South Carolina that he looked so strong, but really I think it was Super Tuesday. I think I had thought the Democrats had made a big mistake by putting all these states so early in the process. But as it turned out, they just speeded up people's decision-making. And so the fact that you had, 38% of the delegates selected by this point meant that they couldn't wait, and they had to make a decision. And what had been going on earlier for the previous months was they were floating around. And so you had people, Warren was up for a little while, Buttigieg did well in Iowa, and they were just sort of trying people out. And then they said, okay, make a call. And so I'm thinking, the Bernie Sanders people hope that there's another twist in this story. I personally think that's unlikely, in part because we're going to some states where Biden's lead, like Florida, is massive. In part, even in Michigan, where Sanders won last time, he's not doing as well this time with working class voters as he did last time. And so even Michigan becomes a harder state for him.
I want to get to Michigan in just a second. But Mark, in the meantime, we've had not just Buttigieg and Klobuchar drop out. Michael Bloomberg, who spent, as we've all said, $500 million in this race, dropped out. And then, as we know, Elizabeth Warren yesterday. Mm-hmm. How do you size up those decisions that they made?
Well, obviously, it's the toughest decision. It's a tough decision for anybody to run for president, knowing that virtually everybody who runs loses. But it's an even tougher decision to end a campaign. That's the saying publicly, I've lost, I've been defeated. Michael Bloomberg made it almost in an analytical fashion, it seemed. There was no road forward. There was no avenue. He had a premise, which was the the cratering and collapse of Joe Biden, and that stopped. If that had continued, he would have been seemingly an alternative. The other problem with Bloomberg, quite frankly, was that he did not match his campaign. His campaign was far more compelling and interesting than he was. And the second...
You mean his ads? Is
his
that
ads,
what you were saying?
And,
his ads.
He was in
right,
person.
Right.
He was just he was a very uninspiring and uninspired candidate when you did see him on that stage. The other mistake he made, and he didn't think it at the time, was on August 15th, 2012. When he hosted at his Upper East townhouse a fundraiser for a Republican senator from Massachusetts named Scott Brown. Scott Brown was being run again opposed by Elizabeth Warren. There's an old state in Massachusetts, don't get mad, get even. She got both. She got mad and she got even. She kneecapped him. He never recovered. That was it. Elizabeth Warren is another case. But go ahead, let David. But I'd be happy to discuss. I just think she's a mystery to me. I mean, I thought she was a phenomenal candidate. I really did. I mean, she had great
energy.
And
she was leading last
October. She was leading. Right. She could. She made a mistake. She was honest. She made a mistake, I think, by endorsing Medicare for All. But then she was honest about paying for it. If you Medicare for All, you got to be a purist, and you don't get into, like Bernie doesn't get into how it's paid for. Once she got into the weeds on that, she lost her purity, and she also, I think, stumbled.
Yeah. How do you see it?
Well, a few different candidates here. One, Biden, I want to mention one thing, that he is a legislature, so he's able to build coalitions, and that's what being president is. Mm-hmm. And with these other candidates, or even with Jim Clyburn, he was going to reach out and say, would you support me? And Bernie Sanders never made those calls or did not have the set of relationships that Joe Biden has. So that's important in a president. On Bloomberg, I started this thinking you can't buy your way in votes in a presidential election. There's too much free media. Good ads don't do it. And I think there's a lot of political science evidence to this that advertising, especially in a high-profile campaign, just does not work. And Biden, Bloomberg did not help himself in the debate, but I don't think ads enough to get you votes. And then finally on Warren, I think the demographics are clear. She didn't have a huge gender gap. She had a huge education gap. And the people who supported her were college educated mm-hmm. people who saw this very smart person with a lot of plans who taught at Harvard Law School. And she grew up in Arkansas, in Oklahoma. Right. And that side of her didn't get out. In Picard, genuinely, when you meet her, she does seem like a very smart Harvard Law professor. And a lot of people just didn't relate.
So talking about, just quickly pivoting, Mark, to the challenges now that Biden and Sanders face, Michigan coming up next Tuesday, David just raised it. What are the challenges that Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden have right now?
Well, Joe Biden's, first of all, is, Trudy, and it's a challenge for anybody who's running for president, and that is to sit down and tell the American people in 2 minutes, without mentioning your opponent's name, without mentioning Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump, why I should be president of the United States. Joe Biden has told us that he's not Donald Trump and that he's not Bernie Sanders. But I'm not sure that anybody really has an understanding about what a Biden presidency would be other than not Donald Trump. And we saw the limits of a not Donald Trump campaign in 2016. So I think that's the first thing. There has to be, whether it's the lift of a driving dream or two things that he wants to get done in his first 4 years and how he's doing, I think that's necessary.
Let me interrupt you. Has Joe Biden done that?
I agree with Mark. He's got to say the Trump people, the people who support Trump and the people who support Sanders do it for a reason. Something's not working for them, but I've got an answer for you. He's basically got to say that with a set of specific policies.
And
Bernie's problem, I think, is a constitutional problem, personally. Bernie doesn't look for allies. He doesn't look to enlarge. He have to pass a litmus test. I mean, that's the Bernie bros. I mean, if you're not 110% on board. And I just think he's not a coalition builder. He's a lone eagle. He's a lone wolf. That's his strength, and it's also his greatest liability.
That's your point about his not reaching.
Right.
Reaching.
And I do think this race really only turns if Biden really looks frail in a debate, really gets crushed in a debate. I think that's if it's going to change, it'll be because of that, he's too old for it.
We will see again. Michigan coming up next week. Bernie won that pretty big last time, 2016.
Bernie's doing less well in every state this year than he did
Than he did 4 years ago. So we'll see on Tuesday, and then there's the week after that, and weeks after that. Finally, and very quickly, coronavirus. It is spreading around the world. It's spreading around the country. Every few hours, we hear about another city or another state, David, where it's hit. How is this president, this administration, leading in terms of instilling confidence in the American
people. Well, we had the report on the Atlantic story that had so few people getting testing. That seems appalling to me. The most important thing is to give out honest information that does not seem political. And this happens to be an area of government where we have very qualified people. Debbie Brix has been with an Obama appointee, Anthony Fauci, Francis Collins, the head of NIH, was another appointee. They just put those people out front, get Mike Pence and especially Donald Trump off the air, because it just seems hyper-political.
It's a time, Judy, when you want the president, the leaders, to be measured, to be thoughtful, to be reassuring, fact-based, and informative. And whatever Donald Trump's strengths are, it's not based on fact-based. It's not based on thoughtful and measured. You saw it in his initial inclination. It's a hoax. It's the press's fault. It's the Democrats, to politicize it. And somehow it's a threat to Dow Jones, which is a threat to re-election. I mean, we'll never get into the public health matter. And I just think he'd be better off, withdrawing and letting others speak for the country.
I mean, he's raised questions, David, about what the mortality rate actually is today, about how many kits are available. He was criticizing
Governor Inslee. It's out of control. It's like an unwell person. And this is the moment when you really need the confidence that people have the health of the country and not their own political health.
But they're not going away, Mark. I mean, the president and the vice president are going to continue to be on TV every day.
But Judy, you're on TV, but you're on TV. Are you on TV discussing this? I mean, what do you defer? I mean, the problem with Donald Trump is he can't defer. I mean, to a Francis Collins or to a Tony Fauci or to people who actually know, because they're not carrying his message. I mean, I just really think he hurts himself by doing it. And, it's almost the Kellyanne Conway, counterfactual, or what was that phrase?
Alternative facts.
Alternative facts. I mean, that's what we're dealing with now.
Mark Shields, David Brooks, thank you.
Thank you.